You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
All right, Carl, I appreciate that very much. Thank you. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner, front and center this hour. Stocks on a streak. The S&P 500 off now to its best start to a year since 2019. And the Investment Committee is here today to debate how much more this rally can go as a new quarter gets set to begin. Joining me for the hour today, Josh Brown, Shannon Sekosha, Jim Labenthal. We will check the markets for you. We're still staying in positive territory across the board on this final trading day of the quarter. I should let you all know, we are going to keep our eyes, of course, on that courthouse in Lower Manhattan, just a few blocks from here as well, for any new developments that come from there. But let's begin by talking about the markets. So, Josh, we are best start to the year since 19. Bespoke says today, if the S&P 500 finishes higher today, it will be the second straight quarter of double-digit percentage gains. That hasn't happened in some 12 years. The big question as we enter the new quarter is, the rally's momentum running out, or do you feel like it's recharging?
So I think that's a big question. But, Judge, I have to differ somewhat and tell you that I actually think the real big question for all of us and for everyone watching is not whether or not the rally will just continue at this pace, which, by spoiler, it won't.
It doesn't have to be at this pace, yeah, but nonetheless, okay, whether it continues or not.
Well, the petering out part. I think this is the real big question. What are you going to do when we have the first correction of 2024? How are you going to act? What kind of nonsense are you going to be retweeting? What kind of stuff are you going to be linking to? What stats are you going to use to scare yourself and others out of buying that dip? That's my question. And I talk to people, they have no idea what's going on. They say, oh, it's all tech. Oh, is it really? Allow me to share the following. The top three performing sectors this year, energy plus 13%. Did you know that? Are you allocated? Communication services plus 13%. Financials plus 12.5%. Let's round up, 13%. So a lot of people are making money away from tech. More importantly, from the COVID bottom, the XLE is actually up 375%. The XLK is only up 200%. So no, it's not just tech. And if that's the thing that you've been hearing people say that's kept you out of this market, condolences. What are you going to do when we have that inevitable? What?
Just,
you all right?
Just give me a second. I'm going to go back to Kate Rooney at that courthouse a few blocks from here, who has an update.
I was clicking.
Kate.
Hey, Scott. So Sam Bankman-Fried officially sentenced to 25 years in prison, and we just got out of the courtroom. Some of the color behind the judge's reasoning when it comes to that sentencing, he had his guidelines, which the maximum sentence was 110 years. It was up to his discretion, and some of the reasons why he said he went with 25 years was deterrence in big part. He talked about the essentially PR campaign that Sam Bankman-Fried went on, pitching the media, pitching people, and he said this demonstrates he knows how to do this, and the will is there in terms of doing this again. He said there was a risk this man would be in a position and it's not a trivial risk that he would commit more crimes in the future. He did say that the 40 to 50 years that the government had recommended was too harsh. So 25 years is in the ballpark of what a lot of legal experts were expecting. He did say on the up there, though, Judge Kaplan said he's been doing this for more than 30 years, said that was one of the most eye-popping performances, as he put it, in terms of Sam Bankman-Fried's ability to evade questions. He was splitting hairs. He was not honest. So the fact that he, according to the judge, perjured himself on the stand did factor into that sentencing. He said he lied up there multiple times. He knew what he did was wrong, and it all went back to his worldview of expected value and gambling. He said he took a chance here in committing this crime and just gambled the wrong way, and he got caught. And that was the judge's argument in terms of why he went with the 25-year sentence. We are awaiting, Scott, the parents, Sam Bankman-Fried's parents, Joseph Bankman and Barbara Fried, to leave the courtroom. They've been here throughout the entire criminal trial. We do expect them to be walking out of the courthouse. The next step here is a potential appeal. We do expect the defense team to file an appeal, but you have to wait for sentencing for that to happen. So that is sort of the next step in this saga, but a long road to an appeal, and legal experts I'm talking to say that it's very unlikely in this high profile of a case that they would have a successful appeal.
Kay, we appreciate that. Kay Rooney outside the courthouse, really just a few blocks from here. We'll come back to you, of course, as needed, as we wait for more developments from Lower Manhattan after that sentencing of 25 years for Sam Bankman-Fried. Forgive me for interrupting you, but we needed to get that news out, and we're probably going to have to do that again, so bear with us here. You were cooking. Continue to cook.
Last thing I want to say on this topic. The reason I ask, what are you going to do during the inevitable correction, is the following. From 2002 through 2021, you basically had this 20-year period where the average, about half the time, you had that decline that we're talking about. You had a 10% dip in 50% of those years, and the average pullback was about 15%. So worse than just a correction, but not quite a full-blown bear market on average. We might have, look, the worst pullback we've had so far this year was 1.98%. So we haven't even been able to have a 2% dip. The market, quote unquote, bottomed for the year on the third trading day on January 4th. And that's really been it. You got a VIX at 13, and you really haven't been tested. You will be tested. What are you going to do when that moment comes? Ask yourself now and answer it and write it down if necessary. But you will be challenged. I don't think it's going to be the same pace, the same momentum all the way through 2024. It would be historically very unlikely.
The question, Shan, to Josh's point is when will that challenge, if you want to use that word, happen? And does it happen sooner than we think? Because, you know, you still have a view, as we learned from our Delivering Alpha investor survey, that two-thirds think that we're primed for a pullback, that the market's run too far too fast. We're entering earnings season. Fed remains still somewhat of a wild card in the whole equation as well.
Well, I think there was some expectation, Scott, that we would see some that the potential for this pullback in this period between the end of earnings season and the start of 2Q, right? So we haven't seen that because obviously we've received, a more dovish tilt from the Fed. And so that created some confidence in terms of the market and in where we're expecting to go. I think it's difficult to pin down what would be the catalyst for such a pullback. There might be fatigue, there might be sort of factor rotation, there might be some changes, idiosyncratic to.
We need to go back to Kate Rooney in Lower Manhattan. Kate?
Any chance for an appeal? Is that the next step here?
No, you guys got to go back.
Any comment on an appeal?
Back up.
Comment on the sentencing?
Back up.
Anything to say to customers and victims here?
There you go. Should have locked them up for way more time.
Any comment on the bankruptcy lawsuit against
time.
You guys here? On the clawbacks? Anything to say to FTX customers?
I'll get our picture. We then ask that you respect us.
So what are you going through now?
What happens to your son, your attorney?
What is your legal advice as an attorney here, what he would do?
I'm not making, not
how
do you take the
How are you feeling today? How are you feeling today? Just your feelings. Has it been?
Has this been a fair trial?
Okay,
nothing. Sorry, they were saying put the stick mic close.
Okay.
I think they got it.
Guys, you dropped your...
They went off.
Oh, hi, guys. Sorry. Hi, guys. We just saw Sam Bankman-Fried's parents leave the courthouse. They're walking down here on Moore Street in Lower Manhattan. No comment from the parents. Joseph Bankman is a lawyer himself. Both of the parents have law degrees and were legal scholars. They did not have a comment. They paused and said, you know, take our picture, but please respect our space here. Clearly emotional, looking at the cameras and taking a moment. But they're walking away, the two of them, under an umbrella. It's raining, as you can see, here in Lower Manhattan. Their son has just been sentenced to 25 years in prison. We do expect some sort of appeal, but they've been here the entire time throughout this criminal trial and the sentencing now. We'll see in terms of where he is sent to prison. It could end up being on the West Coast. His parents are based right on the Stanford campus. But that's the latest, guys. They're headed out here. We're waiting for any sort of press conference or updates outside of the courtroom. But that's the very latest. We'll keep you updated.
You can probably give us some more color as well, Kate, on the plea that Sam Bankman-Fried's parents, including his mother, had made to the judge, hoping for some level of leniency here, too.
His mother wrote a letter and really was trying to get some leniency from the judge, saying that Bankman-Fried was a precocious child, talked about some of his personality quirks, but that really at his core that he was a good kid and that he did not mean to do harm. You can understand as a mother where that's coming from. She really was making a plea to the judge to have some leniency. And that's really what we heard from the defense team. They talked about his moral compass. The defense team got up there and said, as an example, that his brother had told the defense team he's not the type of guy that would give you a hug, but he might give you his kidney. So he was on the autistic spectrum, apparently, according to what his defense team said, and that played into it. They said, some of his behavior is not consistent with what you might expect for somebody in this situation. So that was a big theme. But clearly the judge said, he intentionally committed these crimes. He lied on the stand, which really was at the core of some of the sentencing here. And the perjury aspect of this really was important for the judge and ended up seemingly adding years to the sentence.
Yeah. We'll come back to you, as I said, as needed. Kate Rooney, tough day for the parents, obviously, as you clearly could see on their faces as Kate was trying to ask them some questions as they watched their 32-year-old son sentenced to some 25 years in prison for those crimes that Sam Bankman-Fried had committed. Again, Kate Rooney down at the courthouse in Lower Manhattan. So, Shan, I'll come back to you. This idea of what is going to work and what may be the catalyst. You were talking about, what could it really be that causes the challenge that Josh was mentioning? I mean, we do have earnings season around the corner, by the way. We do have the PCE report tomorrow, even though the market's closed. Those are going to be two potential catalysts for the stocks to move in either direction.
Yeah, I think the narrative coming out of earnings reports is going to be really important, Scott, because it can either conflict or corroborate what we're seeing from a macro perspective. I think the important thing is we're hearing a lot about valuations again. We're hearing a lot about the stretched performance of the market. And if you look at corporate profits between the end of 2021 to the end of 2023, they grew 11%, and the S&P was slightly down. So the S&P has only really caught up to what we're seeing from a profit perspective. And so you could say, in certainly outside of some of the top 10 stocks, that these stocks are not overvalued when looking at their earnings power and potential, but that you have to be selective for those that are actually able to drive earnings growth, because I think that's going to be where you start to see this dispersion or differentiation.
I mean, that's where, Brad Gerstner, right here yesterday, made the argument about the mega caps that the multiples are not in bubble territory. If you look at the multiples, he said Google's trading at 19 times, Meta 22 times, Nvidia 31 times, not in bubble territory. Now, of course, he was comparing those to the historical highs. You have to get it right. We continue to own those names in our portfolio, and many are urging that you should do the same. But Josh makes a good point, Jim, in that, the sector leadership in the first quarter is more even than maybe some actually realize, between tech and energy and financials almost neck and neck. And the top sectors over the past month, by the way, technology is at the bottom of a very crowded list, led by energy and then materials and utilities and comm services and industrials and financials, and then technology.
It's been a really broad rally. It's been lovely. I've enjoyed it. I mean, I think, Scott, and many of the viewers know, I tend to be more broad in my exposure. I'm actually underweight tech. But I think the most useful two things I can say here are, one, to bring up a data point. This comes courtesy of Ryan Grubinsky at Strategus, who points out that after 130 observations of the market up being up 27% in 5 months, which is what we are, that out of those 130 observations, the next 12 months, only one time out of 130 have you had a negative return. Only one out of 130. And in fact, the average return over those time frames has been 15% over the next 12 months. So as we're all talking, and we're really saying the same thing, that yes, there's a correction challenge, whatever you want to call it, coming, and we don't know when it's going to happen, this is fuel to the argument of don't try to time a correction. There are good things happening. The economy is strong. Things that have been lagging in the economy look like they're ready to come up, like housing, like manufacturing. And that should support the overall broadening of the rally. Now, to that broadening of the rally, the first quarter has been wonderful, Scott. For this to continue in the second quarter, you really need earnings beats, meaningful earnings beats, in the first quarter reports from those cyclicals, from energy, from financials, from materials, from industrials, I think you're likely to get them. And by the way, perversely, ironically, whatever you want to call it, that could be the catalyst that actually causes a correction as people say, what next? But for the long-term rally, for that 15% that we're talking about here over the next 12 months, you've got to have good earnings.
Did you vote in the DA survey?
I did.
And so when we asked the top sectors for 2024, near two-thirds of those asked, like you guys, said tech. So
we
still have a propensity.
I don't think he was in that group.
Maybe not. But enough people are non-believers in the idea that tech is somehow going to have this drop back and these other sectors are going to have this, you know, they're going to take the baton, so to speak, and then outrun it.
Your terminology is always so good. Always, really mean it. Like drop back, right? It doesn't have to be a drop back. What if in the second quarter, I'll make this quick, what if tech goes up 4% and everything else goes up 6%? I mean, those numbers are pulled out of thin air. But what if we just get outperformance from non-tech and tech does just fine?
So I keep hearing this thing where the earnings have to deliver. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think there is room. The earnings, like, you obviously can't have like huge shortfalls, but it's not as though we need to do the consensus estimate for this year, which we all know is way too high and it's going to come down. Even if you're bullish, you know it's too high. There are a lot of stories that are working in a lot of areas of the market that are working, not because there's some unbelievable earnings growth story in 2024, but they're still healing from the trauma of 22, 23. I want to give you one example. There's no earnings growth here whatsoever. SL Green, year to date, the stock is up 21%. It's up 165% over the last 12 months. In the last month, it's up 20%. This is a stock, this is a company that basically owns 25 office buildings in Manhattan, give or take. That's the business. There's no earnings improvement coming. There's none existing right now. It just didn't get more bad.
You framed the question
one
well.
One more. We have an ETF that tracks IPOs. Its ticker is IPO, so really easy to follow. It bottomed at 21 in March of 2020. Then it had a rally. Then it got killed again. It hit 24 last year. Now it's back at 41. Many of the companies in the index don't even have earnings. It's a huge rally for the IPO index. So there are areas of the market that don't need, quote unquote, earnings to deliver. They just are recovering from such horrendous expectations. And that could be enough.
Do you think it's enough that there's this mosaic of execution, cost cutting, redefining their competitive advantage? All of these companies that have been able to your point, start to create a narrative why they're better positioned for this next 2 or 3 years if we get better than expected economic growth. Do you think that they continue to be rewarded? Because I think that could be the outlier or the anomaly to this particular earnings season. Maybe we don't get all the beats, but we're getting a revisiting or interest, if you will, in company execution.
Well, Wolf, by the way, Wolf Research today expects another quarter of very solid beats and guidance. I would keep a close eye, too, on margins. Because like Adam Parker makes the argument, that is the thing that's going to continue this leg up. In this bull market, margins are going to continue to be better than expected. Prices, they're going to have pricing power. Prices aren't necessarily going to come down at all from where they're up. Inflation is. Input costs are going to be less. Prices remain where they are. Thus, margins don't contract.
Can I call for a chart, though, on that? Sorry, real quick. Cintas, C-T-A-S. I talk about this a lot as a stock market native gauge on all the things that we're talking about. This is the number one uniform supplier. This is part of the industrial story. They just reported an earnings quarter. Pull up like a 6 month or a 3 month chart of this thing. I don't day trade, so the 1 day chart's not helpful. Look at what this stock has just done after reporting earnings. It's up 16% year to date. They have told you, the CEO on that call told you, everything Scott just cited from Wolf. You don't have companies ordering to the degree that they are from a company like Cintas if you're not going to have another quarter of earnings beats and good things to say. The two things need to go hand in hand, and I think they will. And I follow stocks like this closely because I think their guidance is more important than what an economist might think or a chief market strategist. Sorry, Jimmy.
You framed the question really well, and I'm going to just succinctly say it's a question of, is this sentiment or fundamentals that are propelling the broadening of the rally? And I think that's a legitimate question. Here's why I say that. For 2 years, a lot of these companies, just this is a little contrary to what you said, Josh, have outperformed in terms of earnings. I can look at Wynn Resorts. I can look at Delta Airlines. I can look at General Motors. There's a long list of companies that have outperformed on earnings. Share prices have languished. Now, what has changed in the last 3, 4, 5 months? It may be just sentiment. It may be, and I'm not making fun of this, but the technician saying, oh, well, this many, you know, stocks are above their 20-day moving average or whatever. I'm not making fun of that. But that's sentiment, if you ask me. What I really want is the fundamentals, which have been strong for 2 years, to continue so that it's both sentiment and fundamentals that are propelling these stocks
higher.
Well,
I'll tell you what's changed over the last 6 months. Earnings expectations have come in, to Josh's point. So you went on October 1st, you were looking for estimates for Q1 earnings to be near 10%. You know where they are today? They're half that. They're 5.1. Now, the market and the movement and the price action in the market hasn't reflected what the action in the earnings expectations has done in any way. It's divorced itself from the idea that, sort of to Josh's point, you don't need to blow things out of the water. You just can't have them be horrible. And you need them to be good, but they don't need to be gangbusters, do they?
Well, no, because you have the fundamental improvement in the economic outlook. Look at GDI today, Scott. It's ahead of GDP. That hasn't happened in 4 quarters. That is looking forward from a predictive perspective to tell you that the economy is going to be stronger than people were anticipating. They're waiting for GDI to roll over, and it's not rolling over. So if you look at that and you say, okay, it's all about earnings power, it's all about the ability to grow the bottom line, that will come with time. So we can bring those estimates down for these first couple of quarters, because in the back half of the year, we are going to potentially have this more fertile environment from a growth perspective.
I mean, you do have, you know, the Fed Governor Waller last evening saying no rush, in quotes, to cut rates, really echoing where we are. The Delivering Alpha survey that we do, I think the Fed will cut rates this many times in 24 was the answer. Two-thirds think two. Remember, the market says three. The Fed dots suggest three. So, you know, our, you know, smart group of market experts think be a little bit less than what the market expects. But nonetheless, you're going to get the fruit ultimately, and that's all that really matters.
Well, I've made the case on this show, the longer it takes for the rate cut, the better it is for sentiment, because we would prefer to have that first rate cut and the start of the rate cutting cycle be out there on a fishing pole in front of us, goading us forward. I think that's better than wait randomly, like, oh no, why does the Fed have feel like it has to cut? So there's an asymptotic idea that we could just go on forever knowing that first rate cut is ahead of us. They're tighter than they need to be, but they've made the point in speeches last night. There's no rush. Okay, so that's where we are. There's no rush because things are good. I mean, that's like the way that I would phrase it.
All right, so let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We will have much more on the sentencing of Sam Bankman-Fried, of course. Plus, we're going to get to our calls of the day as well. We're back in just 2 minutes.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
We want to head back down to the courthouse in Lower Manhattan. Our Kate Rooney now has a new statement, not only from the district attorney, I believe, or the prosecutors, Kate, but also from Sam Bankman-Fried's family, whom you tried to get on camera to respond, but at least they are through a statement.
That's right, Scott. We didn't get an on-camera statement, but we have a statement from the family. I do want to start with U.S. Attorney Damian Williams on the sentencing of Sam Bankman-Fried. He says here Samuel Bankman-Fried orchestrated one of the largest financial frauds in history, stealing over $8 billion of his customers' money. His deliberate and ongoing lies demonstrated a brazen disregard for customers' expectations and disrespect for the rule of law, all this so that he could secretly use his customers' money to expand his own power and influence. The scale of his crimes is measured not just by the amount of money that was stolen, but the extraordinary harm caused to victims here. It's a pretty long statement, but that's the crux of it. He says, again, it's an important message to others who might be tempted to engage in financial crimes, and that justice will be swift and the consequences will be severe. And then, Scott, as I mentioned, the statement from Bankman-Fried's family is brief. We are heartbroken and will continue to fight for our son. That's from a spokesperson for the family, Scott. But that is the latest here. And I'll send it back to you. We also, I think, are going to bring in Mackenzie.
I understand
Sigalas
you have Mackenzie Sigalas with you as well.
We do.
Kate.
We do. We'll zoom
we
out
can,
here.
We can broaden the shot out so we can see Mackenzie, of course, for who covers all of this for CNBC.com. And you can give us some color from inside the courtroom.
Yeah, so it's just up there. You had his parents in the front row, Sam Bankman-Fried, and both parents looking pretty stoic. It seemed as though they were braced for this. For this outcome, 25 years right in line with what a lot of former federal prosecutors were saying. The judge is a no-nonsense, veteran of the Southern District of New York. He said that Sam Bankman-Fried in his statement today showed no remorse. It was a continuation of blaming others for things that went wrong. Today, Sam pointed to the bankruptcy estate as being a bad actor and the reason that customers of the exchange were not made whole. He said that the money has always been there and continues to be there. And that goes to a larger narrative that came up during the sentencing where Judge Kaplan said, you know, I can name at least three times. And he gave three examples of when Sam perjured himself on the stand during his trial in October. He said that today's statement was an extension of that, again, still not accepting blame for his role in all this.
Mackenzie, can you give us an idea of maybe the emotional temperature in the courtroom as that sentence was read, both from, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried himself, but also his parents?
It's really his mom who showed the most emotion today. You saw her jaw quivering for the duration of the roughly 2 hour sentencing hearing. She would often, at times when the conversation was escalated, look out the window, look around the 26th floor. You can oversee the Manhattan skyline almost as an escape from the deliberations. Her husband seated right next to her, just completely like folded over. Just parents who are really devastated by seeing what's happened to their son here. They've stood by him. They have been, at least when I covered this trial, they were in that courtroom every single day standing by their son. Sam, no reaction. He really has just been stoic throughout the proceedings when he was found guilty of all charges after 3 hours of deliberation. Same reaction as today when he found out that he faces 25 years in prison.
And Mackenzie, I wonder too, we've been covering this from the get-go. Put in context kind of the scale and what this means for the cryptocurrency industry. It's hard to understate how significant Bankman-Fried was, whether it was Washington or just his influence on the overall industry. Put that in perspective from, you know, covering this for about a year now. What's your take on the long-term impact of this criminal fraud trial?
I mean, it's such a great question. You and I both have been covering this. We've been covering the implosion of Binance's status in the United States. Changpeng Zhao faces sentencing next month. I think it goes to this larger narrative that, you know, the bad actors are being washed out. Meanwhile, major titans of Wall Street, asset managers like BlackRock are entering the space, bringing some of that TradFi legitimacy to, what was once seen as more of a rogue sector. And I actually think it's been a good thing seeing this wash out. And just earlier this week, Do Kwon, another CEO being tried in this courtroom just behind us, also, being put, before a panel.
It's fascinating to see some of the washout in the fraud and crime, really, in this space. It was fascinating, too, to hear the defense say, you know, this is not, or the prosecution, rather, say this is a simple case of fraud and crime, not necessarily anything to do with cryptocurrency. really interesting today, the color from inside the courtroom, too. I wonder, based on the lead up to this, this seems to be in line with what folks were expecting. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. So the government wanted 40 to 50 years. The defense was trying to make the case that he should see a max sentence of 6.5 years because the bankruptcy estate said that they were looking to make all customers whole. They were feeling pretty confident in that. And the judge said, hey, it doesn't matter if in the last 17 months the estate of FTX has been able to piece back together billions of dollars. At the end of the day, as you said, Kate, great point. It's just basic fraud. $8 billion of customer money was stolen and misappropriated.
I thought that dynamic was fascinating. The blame on Sullivan and Cromwell and the bankruptcy team. You heard really them, at least John Ray, who's the new CEO of FTX, say it was a metaphorical dumpster fire, what he took over. So some colorful language there. But Scott, I think we're going to send it back over to you.
All right. Appreciate that very much. Mackenzie, thank you. Kate Rooney, to you as well. We'll come back, of course, as we need to do that. We'll be right back.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
We're back on the Halftime Report. I apologize. I was reading more stuff on the case. Bob Pisani has today's ETF Edge. Bob?
After years of taking the back seat to index investing, active investing in ETFs is having a moment. What's going on? Let's talk with Steve Sachs. He's the COO of Goldman Sachs ETF Accelerator. Steve, ETFs still mostly index-based, but active's getting a bigger slice of the pie. What is happening here?
Yeah, it is, and it's great to see you, Bob. It really is, and it's interesting that this whole active theme started years ago. The first active ETF was actually launched in about 2008. But what's happened sort of very quietly in the last 3 years, ETF assets have continued to grow, but the share of active has continued to grow. So 3 years ago, active ETF assets represented less than 1% of the total. Now it's almost 7%, and two-thirds of all ETFs being launched over the last 3 years are active. So it's tailwind, significant trend in the industry.
I am surprised how many old-fashioned stock pickers are turning to the ETF wrapper. I know you helped Jeremy Grantham recently, for example, start his first ETF in November, famous value stock, Brandis, one of the big stock picking value firms. You helped them launch three ETFs. It seems like the lower fees that the passive ETFs are charging has finally forced the hand of the old school mutual fund managers. That's what's happening, isn't it?
To a certain degree, absolutely. And then just this week, we listed an ETF for Eagle Capital Management, another 40-year-old value asset manager. But I think when you think about all three of those firms that we've helped, it wasn't just the fees, but it's actually two things, particularly here in the U.S. Global trend, without a doubt, but here in the U.S., tax efficiency, obviously, of the existing mutual fund wrapper versus the ETF. Hard to beat the tax efficiency, particularly the transparency and the desire for the wrapper. And that second part, the desire, that's demographics. When you think about the generational wealth transfer that's taking place, the $70 trillion that's shifting hands, that next generation of wealth wants to consume those old school or fundamental managers in an ETF wrapper.
You'd think all the firms that want to start an ETF would have already started one after all these years, but there's still hundreds out there still in the wings. I know Goldman formed an ETF accelerator unit to help these companies create ETFs. Explain briefly, how does this work?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was really ETF accelerator. Goldman Sachs was formed out of one thing and one thing only, client demand. We had over the years a number of clients calling us wanting to get into the ETF space, wanting to understand the roadmap. What were we doing? For lack of a better way to put it, we were really sort of giving them a pedicure and not the entire makeover. So what did we do? We actually launched a platform that allows our clients to come in, launch, list, and manage their own ETFs, but do it with the ETF experience, infrastructure, and risk management frameworks that Goldman can provide. Why? We've been in the ETF space for 30 years, as you know, right? Supporting the very first ETFs launched.
All right, we're going to talk more about that later. Much more on how active investing is changing the ETF space. It's coming up 1:10 p.m. on ETF Edge. Steve is going to be joined by Todd Sohn from Strategus. We'll also look at where the money has been flowing in the ETF world for this amazing quarter ending today. ETFedge.cnbc.com. Scott, back to you.
All right, Bob. Appreciate that. Thank you. Up next, calls of the day. Got some good calls today. Bank of America. We're going to talk some banks, AbbVie, Oracle, and more when we come back. All right, welcome back. Let's do some calls of the day. We'll start with Bank of America today. Downgraded at HSBC. That's to hold from buy. Mike Mayo has raised his price target, by the way, at Wells Securities on Bank of America by $4 to 44. So by the way, it is up 44% as well from the October 27th low. Nobody owns this. You got JPM, though, which has been a stalwart.
Yeah, I mean, it's the best. It's the best of the group on many levels, almost on any time frame that's like reasonably long enough. The stock has outperformed. Nothing against Bank of America. Technically, it actually looks great. And I think a lot of people can make money in a lot of these stocks. The banks have actually been the big laggards amongst the financials. The insurance companies have acted better. We've seen like a lot of outperformance relative to the banks, but now the banks are bringing up the rear, and that's okay. Maybe it's that time in the cycle for them. So I don't think you need a rate cut here. I think similar to the rest of the market, the promise of a rate cut is good enough for right now. And these companies, they've gotten rid of some competitors. A lot of the flows of money have gone their way because they're considered to be safer and more stable. So they've won already on a lot of fronts fundamentally. Now the stock's starting to work.
All right, how about Oracle? Added to the fresh money list at Deutsche. Jimmy, buy 150 is the price target.
Yeah, this is a place to put new money right now. If you're wondering where in the markets you can put new money, this is a place. Now, I'm not saying it can't go down next week by 3%. If it happens, just leave me alone. For the long run, this is a stock that's trading at about 20 times forward earnings with the sentiment. So both the fundamentals and the sentiment is behind it after their Q3 report. Building data centers like crazy to support AI and cloud computing. You know, this is a stock that underperformed technology for the last 15 years and now is rapidly catching up. At the very least, stay out of its way. But if you have money to put to work in technology, this is the place.
If it goes down 3% next week, can I give you the business?
This is how it works? I give you permission? Is that how this works?
Well, you just said if it does, leave me alone. I'm like, I mean, I'm not agreeing to anything.
I know you're not. I was just checking. What is it, opposite day or something?
All right, I don't know. AbbVie, what about that? JP Morgan reiterates that as overweight. You own that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful healthcare stock. They've made some key acquisitions. First off, very attractively priced, 16 times earnings. It's got a nice dividend yield. They've made some attractive acquisitions right now. A lot of money coming into healthcare space. Again, this is one that you really shouldn't worry about. And if you have new money, you can put it to work here.
All right, what about healthcare? Yeah, I mean, yeah, Pfizer, which, you know, you singled out a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, look, healthcare is really multidimensional. It's really tough to make a broad call on healthcare, period. It's not like the energy stocks where they're unidirectional and mostly behave in line with what the commodity does. In this particular case, you've got all different reasons why different sectors might be under or outperforming. I do think broadly the fear over GLP-1 or the excitement over GLP-1, depending on which stock, I think that's probably been overdone. It's going to get very competitive, even if you think it's a huge business. It's not a slam dunk to just buy any company that has a drug in development for that space. By the same token, a lot of stocks have been ignored by investors because they're not working on GLP-1 drugs or they haven't gotten far enough. And I think that's the case with Pfizer. Stock has been left behind by the group, been left behind by the market, one of the worst performing names over the last 3 years. I don't think the fundamentals are as bad as where the current valuation is. I'm a buyer here. It doesn't look like most of the stocks I normally talk about. I usually prefer the 52-week high list. This is on the three-year low list. But I'm in here, and I think things could turn in the second half of the year.
Speaking of healthcare, UNH, Jimmy, that's let you down. It's down 6.5% year to date. It's only up 4% over a year. We all know what the market's done relative to that.
We do, and there's two things facing UnitedHealthcare. One is this data breach from a few weeks ago. It's going to cost them some money. Now, they've already announced I think it's about $3 billion. They've already announced it. The market does want to get past that. It wants to get past the second issue, which is medical loss ratios, which are higher than expectations. In the upcoming earnings report, and they're an early reporter, let's look at those medical loss ratios. That's the real story. The data breach is awful, but it's behind us.
All right, coming up, we'll have more stocks on the move. And Mike Santoli, he joins us next with his midday word.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
All right, we're back. Senior markets commentator Mike Santoli here with his Midday Word. All right, curtain's coming down on the quarter. We turn the page. What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's hard to quibble with what the market's been doing and why it's been doing it. So I think, you know, you guys were going through all of the list of the asset side of the ledger here, and it's getting realized in the market. The behavior of the market itself is probably its best selling point because its ability to get and stay overbought, the way that these kind of persistent rallies go, what it means when breadth has been expanding like this, it always means, okay, no major peak. If we could say no major peak, put it off to the side, then what? And I think then what is, you know, manage your expectations a little bit. I think it's useful to think of where we were 6 months ago. 6 months ago, we don't have enough buyers for all the Treasury bonds. Yields are going to go up. The economy's not going to handle it. The Fed's going to need to engineer a recession. Earnings are never coming back. It's over. Okay? 6 months later, we can't find a negative thing to say about this economy. So it's just a matter of be aware of the ebb and flow. You do have sentiment starting to get a little bit happy. It's not a fatal flaw at all. It's just a bull market. And when it's a bull market, the overshoots happen to the upside. Maybe we're in one, maybe we're not.
Let's get a look at earnings reports, right? Let's see what the commentary is. Let's see what the guidance is. Real, right?
Yeah.
We're going to mark down scores. We're going to decide whether there's legitimacy in the belief that the market can keep going.
Even if we don't compound at 50% annual rate the way we have been.
Exactly. And we get PCE tomorrow, too. We can't forget about that. We're not going to be here, but we will be on Monday. And the market is going to be an interesting trading day.
I'll be right in my pod.
All right, good stuff. I'll see you on Closing Bell today. That's Mike Santoli. Up next, we'll look at some of the committee's top stock leaders and laggards this quarter. We're back after this. All right, we normally do winners and losers around this time of the show every day. We're focusing now on the quarter and the committee. All right, some of your big winners. Shaq, up 43%.
What's up? How you like
Toast,
me now?
Toast, 35. Crowd, I haven't gotten to the losers yet. Hold on. Crowd up 28. Uber 26.
And we're out of time.
Yeah, we'll be right back. eBay 20. Berkshire 17.
Yeah.
Matterport's been a loser. Pfizer, I mean, you obviously bought it recently, so I don't really want to talk about that because you already did. Of the ones that are up a lot, which couple are you most optimistic about as we move forward here?
Believe it or not, I think Toast has the most potential. And people laughed at me on this one, and they may still if it ends up not working out. But this is a small sort of mid-cap-ish name. Doesn't have a ton of coverage. The analysts following it aren't that excited about it. Most of the price targets are close to where the stock trades now. And I understand all the reasons why. It's a competitive space, and having restaurants as clients is not exactly the most exciting thing in a world of AI. I totally get it. I still think there's something special here. So I'm excited about that. I would also just very, very, very quickly point out, this is the whole point of portfolio management and diversification. Yes, I have stocks that suck. Believe me, I know. You don't have to tell me and remind me every time. But when you have huge winners like CrowdStrike and Uber, stocks that go up 200, 300, 400%, the losers don't matter. They shrink in importance to the overall portfolio. You almost can't see them. And eventually when you get rid of them, it's like they never existed. That's the benefit of having a diversified portfolio, knowing some of your holdings are not going to work, and it's fine.
Jimmy, so MP Materials has been a big dud. Paramount's been a disaster, we know. PG&E.
Which would you like to apologize for, sir?
I'm getting to the good ones now. Disney's up 50%. Applied Materials, 27. Would you rather me go through all the whole list of good ones and then say, oh, yeah, well, MP down,
you just
blah,
did that
blah,
with
blah,
me,
blah.
But...
whatever. GM's up 26, Delta's up 18, Qualcomm 17, Berkshire, Exxon, Wynn.
Yeah.
You've had a lot of gainers. I'll ask you the same question. A couple that you're most excited about, don't mention Cleveland Cliffs because you do all the time.
Yeah, I know. Interesting, Delta. I mean, look, I know I used to annoy you with this, Scott, but the TSA passenger statistics are still sky high. People are traveling like crazy. Ed Bastian, every chance he gets, tells you that demand is great. This is one of those companies I mentioned earlier that's been outperforming for 2 years. I think it's going to continue. Same thing with General Motors, by the way. You know, regarding the losers, because I got to do this, and like Josh, maybe you'll take over as my therapist, because picture that meme of the guy standing in the empty pool, you know, looking down like Paramount, like, why, Jimmy, did you not sell it when they cut the dividend? Like, what seriously is wrong with you? There's a character flaw here. I acknowledge it. And it's going higher. So whatever. All right.
All right. We'll do final trades next. Hope you'll join me 3 o'clock Eastern time on Closing Bell. We pull the curtain down on this quarter with Cameron Dawson, Joe Terranova, Chris Toomey, Morgan Stanley Private Wealth, and Mohammed Arjuwala. That is ahead of next week's Ira Sohn conference. So the investor is going to join us. He has an incredible personal story, too. And you won't want to miss that interview. That's coming up on Closing Bell, 3 o'clock. Let's do final trades. Farmer, Jim.
You know what? Berkshire Hathaway, just push the easy button. You don't have to worry about corrections, challenges, or anything.
Okay. Shan, what's on your mind?
Small caps, but profitable ones that are able to grow their earnings against this backdrop.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting call. You think they're going to do better this quarter?
I do.
Josh Brown.
WTI crude up about 1% on the day, $82 a barrel. We're 50 cents away from the highest level of the year on WTI crude. And when we break through, people are going to start talking about that. I'm long IEO, the Energy Producers ETF.
All right. So we are green across the board. We are extending that record high for the S&P 500 by a few points. Just so remember, we had that record close yesterday, a few points higher than that. Dow's good for just shy of 20. We'll see how everything goes over the next few hours. I'll see you on Closing Bell. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Ross has all the spring deals you want, so you can say yes to more looks for you and your budget. Tube tops for less? Yes. Dad shorts for the weekend? Yes. Mini skirts for less than online? That's a yes for you and your bank account. Find your certified yes for me moment and save 20 to 60% off department store prices every day at Ross. Hurry in for spring deals today. Items and styles vary by store.